Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hello, everyone. This is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, live at the NAMM Show. We're recording with various conversations with special guests that are visiting with us here at the NAMM Show and helping us with various advocacy efforts. And I'm delighted to have with me a wonderful old friend. Not that we're old, Heather.
Not too old.
No, but Heather Noonan, who's a vice president for advocacy for the League of American Orchestras. Heather, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
We started our day together on a very intense panel concerning a Tonewood regulation. And you know what? We're not going to talk about that at all.
Fabulous.
Okay. That's a very important regulation that involves the interaction between the needs and goals and desires to preserve our global natural resources and the realities of wood import and export around the world. That conversation that we had this morning is recorded and available at NAMM.org. But as I said, we're going to jump to our other passion, which is music and arts education advocacy. So share with us a bit about your important national organization, the League of American Orchestras.
Thank you. So the League is the national service organization for the more than 1,600 orchestras across the United States. And our membership varies from the smallest community-based orchestras to the largest professional orchestras, youth orchestras, and amateur groups as well. And at the League, we're headquartered in New York, but we have a two-person, small but we hope mighty, office in Washington, D.C., just to deal with the full array of policy issues that impact orchestras and music making in the country. Our membership is actually very diverse and also located in so many places across the country that we cover about 72% of the federal congressional districts out there. So we've always imagined that if we can activate our members on policy issues, they could have a real impact on shaping everything from protected species policies as music makers engage them to music education at the very community level.
And I think they have, right?
Yeah, they really have. But I think some of the techniques that have applied recently in the protected species realm are things that we learned over many years on music education advocacy, which is that having really strong coalition efforts, engaging national interests that go beyond our own direct sphere and shaping solutions to tough policy problems have really been the key to incremental success in this area.
So the League is a service organization for a variety, a vast variety of community-based symphony orchestra organizations,
right? That's
right. With their own boards, their own management teams, sometimes they're all volunteers sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And they're selling tickets, and they're raising money, and they're doing children's programs or family programs.
Right? From
the New York Philharmonic to Los Angeles Philharmonic to a pickup orchestra that maybe sometimes the musicians are playing in multiple orchestras.
That's right. The vast majority of our membership has a budget of under $250,000, very community-oriented organization, many of them mostly volunteer-led, and also engaging a large number of musicians in what they do. So when you think about just the sheer number of musicians involved in this, in each community where you find an orchestra, there's at least 80 to 100 people who are committed to music making in that community.
And a profound commitment to the value of the music in their community of every size,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and having come from one of those communities earlier in my life where there was a Valley Symphony Orchestra, I won't tell you exactly where it was, but they are thriving as a small volunteer-led professional symphony orchestra. So, and they kind of live for that every other year where they do the Beethoven's Ninth, or they live for that every third year where they're going to produce the Fauré Requiem with the local choral society. I mean, this is a wonderful fabric in our country. Right?
It is. And also, you know, when we look at all the challenging issues around the economy in which nonprofit music and arts groups live, it's interesting to watch our medium and smallest size members because they're able to be more nimble in changing and adapting to the environment around them. So for a lot of work that we do, it's about professional development and leadership development in our field. And there are many instances where we look to those smaller and mid-sized budget organizations to show us what's the next best practice that our field can adopt to maintain, you know, their vitality and their relevance to their community.
Can you sum up a specific couple of bullets of challenges currently? I mean, funding has been a challenge. Is the combination of local grants from businesses to the smaller portion of government funding, be it state, local, or national, and then the importance of individual giving. I mean, that lives on forever, right?
It does. You know, more than 40% of the revenue that orchestras rely on year in, year out comes from private contributions. So when we think about the challenges ahead, it's really big questions around the future of philanthropy in this
charitable
country.
Deductions,
the charitable giving incentives,
tax codes
that fuel philanthropy. I think orchestras that are approaching those challenges creatively are looking at partnerships with other nonprofit community-based organizations that are really defining what's the need that's being served, that donors in that community believe is making their dollar well placed. So some of the smaller and mid-sized groups and the larger ones that are on the cutting edge of this part of the relevance question are really becoming very authentically connected to other groups that work in areas like social justice, work at identifying more diverse audiences for orchestras to serve. Another one of the opportunities that we're really looking at right now is how can we diversify not just those folks who participate in this large ensemble music making, but also the people who are on the stage, the people who are serving on the boards, those administrative staff at all levels. And that's really, I think, the core conversation our field discusses when it comes together at our national conference.
And then slowly makes progress going forward.
It takes time.
In a thoughtful, deliberate way. But if the conversations aren't on the table, that progress can never really proceed.
That's right. And just to look at through our own small microcosm, one of the things that has come into the conversation is how do we create more pathways, beginning at the earliest age through public education, for all kids to have a way to participate in this particular art form. And so when we survey our membership from time to time, as all service organizations do, to take the pulse on what they most need, for the last two cycles we've done that, and we've said, what's the thing going on in the environment around you that's going to influence your business in the years ahead? They always consistently identify the presence of music education in the schools as a number one indicator to influence their success. So we've been thinking, as you know, and partnering with others, how we can mobilize that interest into action.
These community leaders.
Right.
Right? Who are exactly sitting on the boards of the organizations, leading them into serving on a school board. Right?
Yeah.
And or leveraging their interest into the school board.
So, yeah.
To be advocates.
Right? Which goes to a whole different mind of thinking, to shift from thinking just about programmatic delivery of education programs, to influencing the public education system.
And community leadership and leverage.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Heather, we've been talking about this for a long time, right? I mean, it's a model, right? It's kind of a model of the model of change. But it seems like this is gaining traction within your members, right?
It is.
Don't just play the Beethoven. Insist that the support and learning for all children to understand Beethoven.
Yes, right? Yes. And so, you know, we've been partnering with NAM to get the word out about the practical first and next steps people can do to take action in their community. Looking now at the implementation of the new education law, with so much of that policy being driven at the state level and the local level, we're trying to give our members a menu of things they could choose from to do that put them into those systemic conversations at a scale that they can accomplish.
Right. And that's a challenge for all of us. We don't want to, you know, you don't have to be a policy wonk to influence policy.
Exactly.
Right? And it's up to us and our conversations with our members who are doing other really important practical work. to bring them a practical to-do list.
Yes.
To get involved.
So one of those things, I mean, you mentioned the leadership on orchestra boards. If those same individuals as citizens take up the mantle of simply asking the question of school systems, where is the music and art education happening and where are the gaps? Just asking them for that transparency first. That's one example of a first step
and
that can
huge.
Be taken.
It's a huge first step, and it can lead to a 3-year plan of reinstatement.
Right, as we've seen.
Right. Yeah, that's really wonderful. You have for many years, is it almost 2 decades, have led the what's called the Arts Working Group. And I think I first became familiar with you in almost in the first decade of that work. And it's been a really important network in leading the national policy dialogue for arts education funding, as well as policy. Tell us where this work is right now and a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. This kind of reminds me of where we've been in election cycles. The language of policy changes with each 4 to 8 years. And when this was born, we first called it the Arts Education War Room. We were in the, you know, we're in the Clinton years.
And there is a documentary called The War Room, which
that's
is,
right.
you know, it's like might be a good antidote for what we've just been through. So,
it very well could be. But I think the idea behind it at the very beginning was to pool our collective capacity.
Was this when we weren't included at all in the national standards movement?
So this was just in the Goals 2000 Educate America Act period.
Right. And we were not included.
When
we
this was
absent.
Born. Right.
Right.
And the idea is that in order to make that happen, you'd have to go state by state by state to have the arts be written in as a core academic subject of learning. So actually, there was a statement of support for the arts as a core subject of learning that happened through that. It got codified even more firmly in the No Child Left Behind Act. But the goal of this group collectively has been to make sure that we are working together to advance common policy requests, and that we're also, because as national organizations, we're about influencing federal policy, but we're also about equipping our members at the grassroots to do the same, making sure that the messages folks back home are hearing from their national groups all add up to the same policy movement. And so I would say after No Child Left Behind was completed, when we decided, you know, what's going to be next, and it only took, what, over a dozen years to write
12,
the next,
right.
the next
right.
bill. I think one way that the arts ed advocacy community pivoted was to not just think about the arts ecosystem, but to put our perspective in the context of the education ecosystem. And that's where the working group started to align more closely with non-art specific education organizations representing elementary and secondary school principals, teachers, to really make sure that what we were doing was advancing a complete education, not just a complete art and music education.
And we started having conversations with the teachers unions, I remember well, and the chief state school officer organizations, and the National School Board Association. I mean, we became just more, I wouldn't say the word aggressive, but just assertive. We were present, and we participated. I know at NAM we participated with consistency at the national conferences. So just by showing up.
Right? Showing up is so
showing
much,
up.
Especially when the conversation isn't about you.
Right.
Being in the room when it's about the bigger picture.
And celebrating student accomplishment through music. It just being there with that emblematic presence. I'm bringing students. A lot of our sponsorship for the School Board Association conference was the 3 high school level performing groups, which opened their plenaries every morning to 6,000 and 8,000, 9,000 school board members from around the country. Watch and listen to this. And why wouldn't you want this in your environment? So, you know, it's a way, I think that was playing into the larger network was really important.
Well, and I think you and NAM as a strategy really embrace something that changed the way we think about how we talk about arts ed policy, which is it's important to be transparent about the gaps. It's important to put pressure on closing the gaps in access. But one of the best ways to do it is highlight the success. To really bring forward the examples of success in music and arts education, what it does for schools, what it does for teachers. I think inside our own community, it's really easy to go to the place of complaining about what's not right or all the ways it may not be working. But advancing policy really works best when you point to the bright spots, the good outcomes, and all of the research we now have. I mean, when I think back to 20 years ago, we were still wrestling with credible research. We're positioned so well now to show people what it looks like when you bring that data to life.
And now I think because we've been clanging the bell with consistency, we can walk into a policymaker's office and they say, did you know how great it is when a kid learns to play the clarinet? And, you know, I kind of go, yes, you're right, Madam Senator. And then you can say, and now you need to be sure to appropriate and make sure. So we're at a much deeper level of our advocacy, never forgetting, you know, we, through the Support Music Coalition, the term, and I need to credit one of our steering committee members who I just saw at the Anaheim Creativity Council the other day, Scott, was we need to be relentlessly positive. And I think that just became the emblematic message of everything. Research, the story of a community, kids' stories. And we're looking for reform, but we're looking for really tweaks. This is not, these changes that we're seeking are not revolutionary. It's just we're looking for the path of no resistance to allow this to happen for kids.
And also to highlight how much public support exists for this happening. You know, and another thing we're talking with orchestras about in terms of taking action is we participated in the U.S. Department of Education's conversations about how they'll address highest poverty schools under the new law, and mostly just showed up to be in the room to hear from those parent advocates. And we got up for a few minutes, a few of us from the arts stood up, said a few things. And the number of parents who came over during the break to say, what you're doing is what our children need, was really overwhelming. So one thing we've been saying to our members is one other step is to really spend time with the parents in your community who can also be really effective advocates with school systems, telling their personal stories, connecting it right back to the kids who are in school right now.
It's about speaking up now, right? I mean, we've always been speaking up, and we go through periods of sort of re-galvanizing that need. And I think we're at the next level of that as well. Heather, you've been leading and serving as a leader for music education and arts education advocacy for a good while, and you're so respected and really a very special person among all of us that are doing this work, and we're grateful for this. You're a registered lobbyist, and we won't hold that against you.
I have a beating heart inside me, and I'm a registered lobbyist.
I always tell people I work in Washington, don't hold that against me. So you're a registered lobbyist for your association. You've worked collaboratively with dozens of organizations. You both led and participated, which is a special skill to do that both, sometimes simultaneously, right? And you've led many initiatives. So my question is, what's our next hill to climb? You have a very unique perspective, you know. What's our next hill to climb?
I can think of three things. There's never just one, right? But one is to stay engaged. It's never been more important to participate in all forms possible in this process, and to value the impact of bringing an example of this work forward, having policy leaders be in the room when a child is making the music. No words, no report can take the place of them experiencing the arts learning right in front of their eyes. So I think we need to do more of that. I think sometimes we forget how much faith we need to put in the music making, the art making itself, and animate what it is we're trying to do with it. The other is, I think the fact is, things are moving faster on the policy front than I can remember them in 20 years. And at the same time, there's more uncertainty surrounding what will happen next than I can remember in a long while. So we might be entering into an environment where there will be very many fires burning on policy issues that the arts and music community care deeply about at the same time. So as someone who's really believes in the coalition effort, I think it's more important than ever that we work strategically together, that we delegate.
So we can be vigilant simultaneously.
So everyone's right? Got each other's back so that we're watching. I see this happening. You might see that happening. And most of all, so that we're pooling our collective clout to bring a unified voice to the issues that really matter.
So you've been to NAMM before.
I have.
What's your impressions on
that? Oh my gosh, I love it. I'm on sensory
overload. Is it like a League of American Orchestra?
It is nothing like a League of American Orchestra conference.
But we would love to have them all here. Well, bring your orchestra leaders here. We would love to have them. Think about that.
Right? You know, most of that, really, all the people on the boards and in the administration came from a place of music before they got there. So beyond and including, of course, the orchestra musicians, it's like a kid in a candy store kind of environment to go walk through that show. The energy is amazing.
It's very diverse, too. It's very empowering, isn't it?
It is.
The level of diversity and the commitment to music and the technology.
Yeah, and the footprint of the sector is huge.
Which is, you know, think about it. We would love to have all of those orchestra managers here. This is, you know.
I think you've been encouraging us to think about consecutive conferences.
We would just love to, you know, we are a big tent. Especially around the advocacy themes, it might be something to think about in the future. So I put that out there officially.
Thank you.
Okay.
Got it. It's on the record.
Any final thoughts?
Just gratitude. Thank you for the leadership of NAM. I mean, you and your members have really brought their full resources to this issue and this cause, and we're grateful.
Well, we're grateful for the partnership, and now we start anew.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So thank you all for joining us. I'm here with Heather Noonan, the Vice President for the League of American Orchestras. Wonderful conversation about our mutual goals for music and arts education for every child. And thank you for joining us for Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAM Foundation.
The NAM Foundation would like to thank Vocal Booth for their support in providing a recording booth for these podcasts recorded live at NAM 2017. Whether you're recording, rehearsing, tracking, mixing, or overdubbing, Vocal Booth has a solution that's right for you. Learn more at vocalbooth.com.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. Nam. That's Mary L. N. A. M. M.